Hello, welcome back to our podcast, Journey Through Hell with Mental Health Conditions, El Infierno de las Enfermedades Mentales. This is episode 34. We have today a special guest, David Bonilla. He'll be talking to us about acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, and mental health. I hope you have had a chance to listen to some of the previous episodes. Please remember that if you want to be part of the podcast in one of the episodes, you can get in touch with me through email, carcorey@pm.me. We are also in Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And well, let's start with this episode. David, hello. Good afternoon.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us today here with this episode. David, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is David Bonilla. I am a licensed acupuncturist in the state of North Carolina. It is my full-time professional job. As far as the training to be an acupuncturist, it is technically a four-year master's program. You do graduate with the master's, and then you have to pass your national certification exams, and then you use that to apply for a state licensure. And from there, you are qualified to go into private practice, work in a hospital setting, that sort of thing. So I've been in practice now, I've been treating patients for about 10 years. And while I have a diversity of causes and conditions that cause people to see me, mental health usually plays a secondary, if not primary, role in why people come to me. So I find that I tend to get a lot of the patients where more, I hate to say traditional because that's not a great word, but I think we know more traditional approaches to medicine, therapy, medication may have not worked out as well, or they're looking for extra support. Mm-hmm. So I do think that sometimes when I think about mental health and the impact of acupuncture, I do have to remind myself that I have a bit of a selection bias. And I know that traditional approaches to psychiatric care and things of that sort can and do save lives. I don't recommend Chinese medicine as a substitute to that sort of thing. But it can be a helpful adjunct. And for those who have not found relief through psychiatric intervention, it's worth a shot. It's extremely safe. So that's kind of, that's how I would introduce myself for this podcast.
Okay, thank you, David. Before we jump into more in depth with acupuncture, what is acupuncture? How would you describe acupuncture to those of us who may not know what it is?
Okay. Yeah. So acupuncture as a term simply means the usage of needles on specific areas of the body to elicit responses in the body. And as far as how we explain what acupuncture is and how it works, you can take two approaches. There's the traditional Chinese medicine explanation, and then there's the what we know from the biomedical side of things. And so I'll start from the biomedical side. Acupuncture seems to have a direct impact on the nervous system, specifically brain and peripheral nervous tissue. This is visible on, MRI scans where acupuncture is administered to patients in real time. They can see which areas of the brain light up depending on which points you use. These studies have been repeated. They're pretty solid. And so from there, it's a bit of a mystery. I don't think anyone really has it nailed down as to a biomedical explanation of why acupuncture does work, but there is a lot of research showing that it does work. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the traditional Chinese medicine explanation, acupuncture and the where you put the needles and how you put the needles impacts what we call qi in the body. And qi is this in Chinese language, it is a very broad, nebulous term that means a lot of things depending on the context that you use it in. But for a medical context, it means you could think of it as sort of like an organizing force in the body, something like the opposite of entropy. It is the tendency of life to live, and to the capacity that you can self-heal, that is the degree to which acupuncture can help. So we use needles to affect this self-healing mechanism of the body that is latent in everyone. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And I want to ask you something else about this. Is there some kind of spirituality attached to acupuncture and needles being in certain parts of the body?
Not necessarily, though it really depends on whose writings you read and what time frame, because acupuncture comes to us from thousands of years of Chinese history. So as different empires have come and gone, as different philosophical schools have come in contact with Chinese medicine, different spiritualities such as Taoism or Buddhism, they all kind of impart somewhat of a flavor onto how people think about how acupuncture works that is relevant to their time and place. And so for me, where we are, where we live now, that's why I lead with the biomedical explanation, because we have to meet people on terms that they understand. And then we can kind of talk about things that maybe we don't understand as a culture and how to go about discussing those topics. So I don't think there's, you know, I treat all kinds. And actually one of the instructions from one of the very, very ancient scholars and practitioners of Chinese medicine, he said, you know, when people of a faith, of a spiritual belief come into your clinic, you must engage with them according to the framework of their spirituality. So if people come talking about Buddhism, use Buddhist analogy to explain what's going on. If they talk Christianity, use Christianity. If they are atheist, that's where you meet them. And so it is just a needle, and it's going into someone to help them feel better. And anything besides that is kind of things we add onto it, depending on who we are, where we live, that sort of thing.
And that is basically a personal thing, right?
Yes.
If somebody comes to your practice with a different kind of religious or something, you just adapt acupuncture to their needs, I guess?
Maybe in how I would describe things. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily jump right to that, but let's say someone was conflicted. There is, unfortunately, in some populations of Christianity, I have heard that, you know, people don't want to see acupuncture because they think it is somehow opposed or contrary to the dictates of Christianity. And yeah. I can say for certain that's not the case at all. And you know, we can talk about why that is, and talk about Jesus and what his role is for people in Christianity and how acupuncture does not conflict with that. Even though I myself am not a religious Christian, I can still use that language in hopes to put people at ease if they have those sorts of worries.
Okay. All right. David, this might be a silly question, but can you explain the differences between traditional Chinese medicine and Western medicine?
Yeah, I would say the biggest difference is the lens through which we interpret problems and solutions. So if you give someone an herb, or you put a needle in their body in a certain spot, let's say a spot on the hand, how, you know, there's going to be an effect in that person. And then how we describe that effect, really, that's the only difference. That's where you're going to see it from. Okay, the herb is, you know, loaded with these sorts of phytochemicals, which are going to create these sorts of biological responses, you know, and oh, that's why, you know, Suanzao Ran Tong helps people fall asleep. That's the herbal formula. Whereas in Chinese medicine, you say something like, okay, Suanzao Ran Tong, for insomnia, we're quieting the heart, calming the shen or the spirit, that sort of thing. So does that answer the question? I just see them as two different lenses. They're both describing the same reality. Like if you were to get an MRI or an X-ray of your hand, it's still a hand. You're just seeing different aspects of it.
Okay, David, how would acupuncture help someone with a mental health condition such as depression or insomnia, as you mentioned?
Yeah, so first and foremost, when I have a conversation with a patient who has any sort of mental health issue, you know, we have to talk about the support that they're already getting or that they feel they're not getting. We have to talk about, you know, daily routines, because at the root of Chinese medicine, when you read a little bit about it, harmony with natural cycles comes into play first and foremost. So we have to kind of set a whole context in terms of how we want to talk about a healthy way to live that can support us as we move through these periods of dealing with mental illness. And then when it comes to acupuncture, you know, acupuncture, as far as something like depression, there are many kinds of depression. But when we think of depression through a lens of Chinese medicine, we can think in terms of, for example, a good one is yin and yang. In Chinese medicine, mm-hmm. we can think of, in this example, we can think of yin as latency or dormancy and yang as activity. And depression is a very yin condition where when you have a clinical depression, things like anhedonia, things like not wanting to get out of bed, you're no longer finding enjoyment in your life. That sort of thing, that when we mobilize the yang in the body, and there are different ways to do that, doesn't need to just be acupuncture, people tend to feel better. And so that is another aspect of Chinese medicine where the diagnosis and the treatment are somewhat of the same thing. That when we use an intervention, we can kind of see, okay, because I did that and it's supposed to push on that system, if they felt better, then that's the approach we need to look at. You know, what's going on with that system? And so looking beyond just the needle, lifestyle, that sort of stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Would you think that a Chinese person would go to a psychiatrist and use Western medicine before or after trying traditional Chinese medicine?
Really depends on the patient, their level of emergency. If they feel like they're at risk of harming themselves or others, I would say that's an imminent psychiatric question. If it's the sort of thing where, you know, you've been dealing with it for years, maybe or maybe not, you've tried these other approaches, you know, you can try acupuncture if it's not an urgent case. So what I would say is, you know, when you're booking an appointment for a psychiatrist, a lot of times you can't get an appointment for a month, 2 months.
Yeah.
So if it is purely down to practicality, getting some care, go with who you can get in with. I don't think there's any reason to pick one or the other than your own personal preferences. So as long as you find a competent practitioner, either psychiatrist or acupuncturist, then you should be in good hands. So,
okay, well, that's very interesting. I've seen that there is a scarcity of a mental health clinics and practitioners here who can serve the community. Sometimes a patient has to wait for maybe 2 months to see someone. Mm-hmm. That is an issue here, at least here in Charlotte.
Yeah, and that's common. And I would add one more thing to that. You know, it depends what's causing depression. I've treated patients that are depressed because they're in chronic pain. And if you don't address the pain, then you're probably only going to be managing the top level of symptoms of their mental illness rather than actually resolving it. Now, we do know that depression can increase perceptions of pain. So sometimes treating the depression can lessen the perceived pain. But if that's not the case, maybe you've had a surgery and you're still in pain from years later. This is something I treat all the time as an acupuncturist when other approaches have failed. So yeah, if that's going to contribute to someone's depression. So, and that's another thing with Chinese medicine, a good segue, that, you know, we're not just looking at mental health when someone comes in talking about mental health. When someone tells me they have anxiety, my first question is, where do you feel it? And that usually prompts a moment of contemplation. And they might say, oh, I really feel it in my chest when I get anxious, or I really feel it in my stomach, or I really have to run to the bathroom, or I really have an awareness in my head of all these thoughts. And so those are different kinds of anxiety in Chinese medicine. We can't just call it anxiety in our system. We have to describe it in ways that make sense so that we can look at the different aspects of their life that might be exacerbating things. And, you know, depression and anxiety, they all co-occur together and they make each other worse. So sometimes that's why the psychiatric approach of, okay, we're going to give a psychiatric drug, an anti-anxiety drug for anxiety, then there's knock-on effects, you know, of libido or something like that. You know, those are concerns that people have that are absolutely legitimate. And acupuncture, it's the side effects include better sleep, you know, things like that. They're positive side effects generally. So that's, I would just add that to the discussion.
Okay, that is very interesting, David. The side effects of Western medicine. When I went to see my first psychiatrist many, many years ago to explain my depression and anxiety, they never asked me where I was feeling anxious, in what part of my body. They mm-hmm. just gave me lorazepam, and that was it.
Yep. The rest, and you know, that will work. You will not have anxiety while you take that. Now, what's causing the anxiety and how does it manifest? Those will not be resolved. And now I will say that's maybe a bit harsh. I could caveat that, add some nuance to it, and say sometimes these medications given without a whole lot of history taken, such as where you feel your anxiety, they can work enough so that you can adjust factors in your life that are out of balance so that you can get to a place where you don't need the pharmaceutical. That's always possible. And that's an ideal outcome. But there are some people that they just haven't gotten to that place yet, despite being on medication for many years. And even if they get acupuncture and it quote unquote works for them, that doesn't preclude the necessity of medication moving forward. It would just help to kind of lighten their load, so to speak, of just baseline suffering that people have. That's ultimately what acupuncture and medicine in general is all about. It's about the perception of suffering. If someone is only sleeping 6 hours a night, that I would say that's not healthy, but how is that showing up for them in their lives? Is it okay? Then where's the problem? You know, do they need Ambien to fall asleep? If their life is totally fine, they're not falling asleep throughout the day, there's no otherwise consequences to that sleep pattern. So all of these things are contextual to a person's time and place. You know, a little bit of anxiety in a crowd is normal, I'd say. That's probably a good thing to have. So a little heightened awareness. It's when you're carrying that in your day-to-day and you're going into a store with four people and you're getting anxiety and you don't want to go in, that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think we are a culture that runs to the pharmacy right away when we feel...
Absolutely. And that, yes. And that's not just us. That's most of the developed world. These medicines are definitely on the back foot. You know, as far as a traditional Chinese medicine and things like that, they're not taking center stage yet. But I feel like as time goes on, people discover more and more. We have these sorts of conversations and the word spreads and it becomes an option and it's safe. So that's what needs to happen. We need to just do good work in our fields. And everything will hopefully work out.
Yeah. David, do you think that Chinese traditional medicine uses, in certain cases, what in Latin America is ancestral medicine, such as ayahuasca, magic mushrooms, peyote, all those things?
Could you explain what you mean?
Yeah, if there is in traditional Chinese medicine something like... some people use in Latin America as ancestral medicine.
I see, more of like a visionary medicine sort of thing.
Yeah, ayahuasca, magic mushrooms, peyote, all those things that have an ancestral tradition in many cultures in Latin America to heal certain spiritual and mental health conditions.
Yeah, so like in most cultures that are post-industrial, these sorts of medicines have been suppressed, and China is no exception. There is a history in China of psychedelic mushroom use for various purposes, like many cultures. Now, Chinese medicine has some to say about this. Now, I had a teacher in school, we asked him about this, and he speaks and reads Chinese, so he's qualified to give an answer as far as what the sources say. And he said there are writings where these sorts of substances, not peyote necessarily, but something more indigenous to the Chinese mainland, would be used in inducing a vision state, that sort of thing. And there are shamans on the other side, so to speak, that are working to keep you out. And that if you go through, you basically lose your mind. And so we would see it as a psychotic break or something like that. So that is a little bit of insight I have as far as like what Chinese medicine says about these medicines. That's kind of the danger of them. But you're not going to see protocols for using, inducing visionary states for healing out of kind of orthodoxy, TCM. That's just not really emphasized in the training either in China or the United States at this point. What you might encounter, though, receiving acupuncture, and this is something that I have encountered personally in receiving acupuncture, and many of my patients have talked about, where some people will fall into a visionary state of some sort. It might not be as intense as something like ayahuasca or psychedelic mushrooms, but it is, you know, people will fall into what's called the hypnagogic state, which is the state between sleep and wake, and they will stay there for several minutes to 20, 30 minutes. And they might indeed have some sort of vision of something happening, either in their past or something that hasn't necessarily happened yet. And, you know, I don't necessarily know what to do with that information, but it usually precedes a good treatment. And people feel better after they have these transcendent experiences. And that's something that's common throughout the research that's been undergone with using psychedelic mushrooms to ease end-of-life fear in cancer patients, that sort of thing, where you don't necessarily need to have a spiritual experience to benefit, but it seems to kind of tag along with it.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm asking this because I was part of an ancestral ceremony last year, and I went through this ancestral medicine, magic mushrooms. And for some reason, it helped me with my depression. My depression is gone. And I don't know, is the use of these things legal in China?
You know, they probably don't even have laws about ayahuasca, to be quite honest. I know a friend lived there, and I asked him about something like this, and he said there's just purely no awareness. You know, if you had a bag of mushrooms out on the street and a cop looked at it, he would just think, oh, you have some weird mushrooms from the market. You know, there's a lot of weird mushrooms all over the world.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. David, that's something that I want to touch here today is about Hispanics and acupuncture.
Uh-huh.
Are they aware, or are Hispanics willing to try acupuncture for certain things like pain or mental health conditions or that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, all the ones that come to me certainly are. I can say that. Now, I mean that a little bit in jest, but in general, when I have conversations with people who are, you know, recent immigrants from South America or something like that, there doesn't seem to be anything in the culture in the kind of Western Hemisphere, Latin American society, that would really preclude someone from seeking out acupuncture. In general, people in those sorts of societies grow up being exposed to herbal medicine, for example, things that are just normal cooking spices that you make a tea out of and it can treat your stomach ache, that sort of thing. You know, and there's somewhat of a basic awareness of that in our modern day society here in the West. But it's much, much richer, I find, on average in my Latin American patients. I had a patient from the Dominican Republic, and I did cupping therapy on her, which is kind of a mainstay of traditional Chinese medicine, using these glass cups to form a vacuum over the skin, which kind of separates the muscles and lets in fresh blood. And it seems to work out tension and tightness for people pretty effectively. And I did this to her, and she said, oh, my mom used to do that, you know, back in the Dominican Republic when I was a kid. Yeah. And I've had plenty of patients from all over the world tell me stories like that. So there are indigenous medicines that have a lot of these techniques in common, and they just adapt to their local area. So that, you know, the herbs found in the Dominican Republic will be distinct from most of the herbs found in mainland China. Although mainland China has almost every single biome, so you're bound to find an analog of any herb that you're going to find anywhere. But it might not be the exact same one. So what I would say, though, that what going back to your question, Latin American people are generally receptive to acupuncture. If they're in pain, they want to get out of it. Most of the patients that come to me and they're in pain, for example, they've already tried pain medication, and it's not cutting it. So
yeah. Well, I was asking that because there is a lot of stigma in society, and it's a very strong stigma around Hispanics when they talk about, or they don't talk about, mental health conditions. They just don't do it, and they go suffering for a long time before they go talk to a psychiatrist or psychologist, or they look for someone in acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a big issue here in our society.
Yeah, you know, actually, the only exception, which proves the rule, I would argue, is that in Argentina, they have the most psychologists per capita of any country on the planet. So that is an interesting kind of anomaly in the whole Latin American society. But I would agree in general, there's a lack of sensitivity to that sort of unseen suffering. If you're walking around with a bum leg and you're limping, people can readily see that. But if you have an invisible illness of any sort, you know, unless it shows up as a rash, it's really hard for people to understand that. And then the compounding variable is that mental illness has a strong family history component. So if your father was, suffered from depression, it's very, very likely that you may suffer from depression given the appropriate context. As people have normalized that sort of suffering, then they are discouraging their children from talking about it and seeking out help. They're saying, well, you know, we all have a rough day, get out of bed. And that's just not going to help anybody, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it takes a lot of education, right?
Yes.
Reading and I don't know, just learning about all the options that people have out there to deal with certain conditions. Do you have patients who have told you how much their mental health conditions have improved after several sessions of acupuncture?
Yeah, I have patients who have told me that in some cases it's completely disappeared. Anxiety in particular seems to respond very well for my patients to acupuncture. Depression, I find, is a bit stickier of an issue for many reasons. I think, when you said you took part in an ancestral medicine ceremony, these are very, very intense experiences. So they represent somewhat of an event horizon where there's everything before the ceremony and everything after it. And acupuncture doesn't normally carry that level of impact for people to really turn them around in a few hours, like some of these psychedelic medicines do. I think the psychedelic medicines in some ways just access a deeper part of our human experience. Now, with anxiety, I think it makes sense because it's a lot easier with acupuncture to calm down someone's nervous system than to excite it. It's not that you can't, it's just that it seems to be more readily suited, at least in my experience, to kind of nervous disorders of that sort, where people feel jittery or their heart rate starts to increase or they start sweating. They have these sort of autonomic responses to situations that don't call for it and they want help. And then, yeah, I have patients, for example, I'm thinking of one patient who suffers from anxiety and she's a flight attendant. And her job is very, very stressful. And I think she has already dealt with anxiety and mental health conditions, depersonalization, that sort of thing prior to becoming a flight attendant. And I think the disruption of her sleep cycle and the constant, you know, being on the go and not being at home has really made that much worse for her. And for her, because she's still working as a flight attendant, until she finds another job, she doesn't feel like she can really get past this 100%. But every time she's in Charlotte, she comes to see me because when she gets acupuncture, her anxiety abates for about a week, where it doesn't reach the level of severity where she feels the need to take, you know, a medication as needed. So I think, you know, we can offer people at least some hope that there can be some improvement on a spectrum from a little bit of help to I don't need my anxiety medication anymore. I have had people that, for all intents and purposes, get better. That does happen. I recall one patient in particular, and this is not necessarily an acupuncture solution, but they came to see me for acupuncture, and being trained as an acupuncturist, I ask about more than just, you know, what we're going to be doing with the needles. She told me she didn't eat breakfast and she's having panic attacks at work. I said, eat 2 eggs in the morning, no more panic attacks. Sometimes it is, you have these little levers like diet and sleep that you can pull on, and they have a huge impact for people. And that's actually my own first experience with acupuncture. I was going for, as a 20-year-old, kept getting repeated sinus infections. Antibiotics would take care of it. It would come back. And I did that several rounds and I got frustrated. And I was talking to my mom about it. And she said, oh, go see this acupuncturist. And within the first 2 minutes, she asked me if I drank milk. And I said, yes. And she told me to stop. And they completely went away. The acupuncture made me feel amazing. But it wasn't the acupuncture that cured the sinus infection. It was the knowledge of the acupuncturist, knowing how these symptoms of damp, what we would call dampness showing up in the nose, is exacerbated by a damp producing food like milk.
So. Okay, well, that is so interesting, and that brings me back to how Western medicine works in terms of not going to that root of the problem. You come up to see a doctor. And I don't want to say, I don't want to generalize and say that everyone is like that, but most of Western medicine just go to solve the problem at hand right away without going to the root of it.
You know, and that's a lot of that is a time limitation. A lot of times if you're, most people's access to a doctor is mediated through an insurance company and a hospital network. And so you're going to get 5 to 10 minutes with a doctor. And that's sometimes just not enough time for them to do anything but, you know, check a list of contraindications and make sure the medicine is safe for you. And let the pharmacist kind of take over. And I would say, this is just an aside that I talk about with all of my patients who are concerned about their medications. If you're having side effects with a medication or a cocktail of medications, sometimes the best person to talk to is the pharmacist. And you can say, here's my list of medications. Do you see anything here that would maybe make my insomnia worse or my anhedonia worse because it's really flaring up for me right now? And then sometimes it's just as simple as a 2-minute conversation. They say, yeah, I would maybe switch that blood pressure medication because that's probably causing, you know, the increased heart rate, and then talk to your doctor about this. And what I love about it is it's free. It's included in the medical system that you have access to these doctors of pharmacy that know much more about pharmaceuticals than any doctor, because it's their job to know about pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
That's kind of an underutilized resource, I would say.
I think there's a very special cultural component in society where we tend to believe that we shouldn't ask questions to doctors or other people involved with our health, because we see them as gods. Well, he's a doctor, she's the doctor, she or he knows best, and who am I to ask something?
I fully agree. That is definitely a limitation for people. I think people also don't know how to talk to doctors. They don't know how to get good answers out of them sometimes. How do you get good answers out of someone who has 5 to 10 minutes with you? You know, you really have to know the questions you want to ask before you come in to make the best use of their time. So that, you know, you don't get dismissed by a busy doctor, that sort of thing. And so there's something, I think there's a responsibility on both parties to do better, to make use of those interactions. But I would agree that once you walk into a doctor's office, it's their responsibility to find out what's going wrong. It shouldn't be on the patient to know exactly what to say to get good treatment. That should not be the case. But unfortunately, there is that responsibility on the patient to maximize their time with a medical professional. You don't really run into that with acupuncturists. Usually we have more time to talk about things. We schedule that in at least to the first visit. Some people make their follow-up visits a little bit more routine. Others make time every visit to talk more. Usually they're open to things like emails, that sort of things. But I've had patients get very frustrated with their doctors because they, you know, ask them a question over email and they get some boilerplate response that they've already talked to them about, and it's not helpful. And I think that's a time thing. If they have 400 patients, it's just a lot. So there's some systemic contributions to that dynamic. And I think the whole don't question the doctor sort of thing, we just have to think, like, who is that serving really? You know, I think there's some doctors that don't want to be questioned, and other doctors that maybe wish their patients would be more involved. So it depends what culture you come from. I know in Chinese culture, that's very, very prevalent. The doctor knows best, and you don't really question the doctor. And American culture, I think we have a little bit more of a rebellious streak, but it's still, I think, the dominant sort of paradigm as well, to not question as much.
I would say that Chinese and Hispanics are the same in that regard. They don't question their doctors, or we don't question our doctors. We are not very proactive, and we just take whatever they give us.
Yeah. You know, that works both ways though, right? Because someone with that sort of upbringing, if they find a really good doctor, a really good acupuncturist, and they tell them, hey, you got to do this every day, they're going to do it, you know? And in some ways, those kind of cultural things that might get in the way of your medical care in one aspect can really help you in another.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, David, it's been a wonderful conversation. I have learned a lot.
Hey,
and I hope people listening to our podcast are also learning a lot about acupuncture, traditional Chinese medicine, and how all these combined can help to to alleviate some mental health conditions.
Yeah, you know, I wish we had more time, and maybe we can do this again, because I feel like we just scratched the surface of some of these topics. Unfortunately, the big elephant in the room is the dominant mental health care paradigm in this country, which is, you know, biomedical intervention. And, you know, we could talk more maybe another episode about some of the concepts that outline mental health illnesses in Chinese medicine and how they can kind of apply to a more individual level for a listener that's curious. But yeah, we can, if you'll have me back, I'm absolutely ready for another one.
Well, just get going. I'm not going anyway.
Oh yeah. Okay. Do you think we have a few more minutes?
Yeah, I have 4 minutes. Okay. I was just saying thank you because I thought you were going to be in a hurry.
Oh, you know, no, I have some time here. Probably another 20 minutes or so. I think I'd be okay.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, go ahead and keep.
Yeah, yeah. So about this. So now that we've dealt with Western medicine a little bit, and I think it's important that we all talk about that. I want to talk about, you know, Chinese medicine, how we organize our thoughts about mental health from our Chinese medicine framework. And what's interesting about Chinese medicine is because over the years, it has agglomerated and aggregated various philosophical schools in Chinese medicine, you get a few lenses to kind of play with in order to interpret your reality. The most famous that everyone knows about is yin and yang. And I used an example earlier in depression of mm-hmm. depression being a sort of unexpressed yang kind of activity, and you have to bring that to the surface. One way we can look at that and interpret kind of some findings is if you look at the research on sauna therapy, which is, you know, whole body hyperthermia, you're heating up the whole body. There's some good data out there showing it has an antidepressant effect for almost up to 2 weeks in some people. For you do it at a reasonable intensity for at least, you know, 10 to 20 minutes. And some people really do feel like they get an antidepressant, anti-anxiolytic effect from that. And Chinese medicine would look at that and say, okay, what's going on? You're getting really hot. You're starting to sweat. There's even a little bit of agitation. You get to a point in the sauna where it is uncomfortable to be in there, and you want to get out. And what mm-hmm. that is the yin transforming into yang and moving around in your body and causing you to sweat and causing you agitation. And then you get out. And as you return to baseline, it's like your body's been given a cue of like, oh, we were stuck on that other polarity and we've been shoved into a new polarity, the opposite of a latent state. In fact, we're very, very stimulated right now. And we have to kind of go back towards that latent state without overcorrecting into a depressed state. And so that's how Chinese medicine can be used to interpret some of what people are learning about now in terms of sauna, which I really, really like as a recommendation for people. It's not as accessible as I would like, but it really does work for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Now, when we want to talk about kind of emotions and mental health, which I think are tied together very, very well, the framework that we use in Chinese medicine is the five phase or five element system. And I prefer phases, even though most people have, if they've heard of this, they've heard of it, the word element. I don't agree with that translation, but it can be used interchangeably. I say phase because these phases change. And so you might hear, oh, I'm a wood element or I'm a fire element. That's not how it works at all. So if you go on to do more reading about this thing, you come across that idea, you are all of these things at all times. It's just some play a more dominant role in certain moments of our lives or times of the day than others. So we'll start kind of from the top, and I'll give you a brief overview of these kind of phases, and you can kind of sit back and see for yourself how, you know, which one really stands out to me, which one kind of describes me in my trend. And then, you know, that's how I feel like people can get a little bit out of Chinese medicine, just some of the basic concepts. Because if you know what direction your phase kind of relationship is being pulled in, you can course correct by kind of doing the opposite. So we'll start from, you know, what is the five phases? The five phases are named after organ systems in the body, and they are associated with elemental forces in nature. So for example, you have kidney, which represents the water. It's the kidney-bladder connection in the body. And things that are associated with the kidney in pathology, and I should also back up a little bit and caveat, we're not talking about your blue, purple, fleshy kidney organ, right? When I say that there's a kidney dysfunction in Chinese medicine, it doesn't mean your kidney is, you know, you need dialysis or something. It's not about that. It's a more, it's a metaphorical approach to understanding these. It's a subtle approach. It's not representing your physical heart or your physical liver, if that makes sense.
Just it doesn't say that. It doesn't mean that you have a cancer or anything like that.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's just something kind of a, as you say, something moving inside your body that is causing this imbalance.
Yeah, even zooming out further than that, it's just what we are calling that. It's just a name. We're using kidney, we're using liver to kind of create an umbrella under which certain concepts about health can be nested under, so that as a Chinese medicine practitioner, when someone comes to me and they say, yeah, when I get stressed, I get really angry and my face turns red and I start yelling. Okay, that's a liver pathology. It doesn't mean their liver's messed up. It just means that we're calling it that liver qi, and I'll explain a little bit why. So we'll start with kind of the order of the elements. So the first one is that water phase. And the water, you know, think of what water does. It seeks the lowest position. And so when the kidney is healthy and the kidney is strong and the water element, water phase is strong in a person, they have a lot of willpower. And then what is the opposite of willpower? It's fear. And so someone that kind of has like a fear / fright, either acutely, they get, you know, and they're in a really scary situation, and now they're having like PTSD symptoms, for example, we might look to say, okay, that's a kidney imbalance, right? And so what do we need to do? We need to actually move. That's like one of the things. And that's a real obvious one when you look at it. You want to go kind of the opposite direction. You want to climb tall things, so to speak. But one of the things with the kidney water energy is it represents our ancestry. And so we can think in terms of, you know, there's a teacher, he actually passed away, Alex Tiberi, and he said, if you want to kind of strengthen the kidney element in people, the best thing that they could do is to go lay flowers at their parents' graves, their ancestors' graves. And I always really, really like that, because the kidney energy is a very subtle, hard to reach, deep sort of thing. And there are some herbs, and there's, you know, things like sauna that can access it, and movement. But it is one of the more difficult things to manipulate in Chinese medicine. Not impossible, but it's just, you know, that's kind of the way we learn it. And then so the kidney, the water, gives rise to the wood. The wood is the liver. You know, and each of these phases and elements are always associated with like a season, for example. So like the kidney is with winter, the wood is with spring, that sort of thing. So there's many, many relationships. We don't have time to go into every single aspect, but we can give a brief overview. So when you go from the water phase into the wood phase, we think of what wood is doing. Wood is almost the opposite of water. Wood wants to go straight up. And I used the example of anger earlier. That is the emotion associated with a liver that is in pathology in Chinese medicine. When the liver is damaged, there is anger. And so what we do is we have to get the four limbs moving, especially in the morning time, because the morning time is like the springtime of the day. It's when everything starts to rise. And so if we don't get our morning movements in, it's easier to get frustrated throughout the day, because that qi that's supposed to go out to our four limbs, when the liver is damaged, that qi just goes straight up to our head. It might give us headaches, especially in springtime. That's actually something that we see in Chinese medicine. More headache patients in the spring, or patients that don't normally get headaches start to get headaches. And so, you know, we have, I would say acupuncture works really, really, really well for this sort of thing. This is a really, really good one. Do you have a question?
No. Yeah, I was going to say something that you are mentioning, all these elements or phases, some people call them. What I can see, David, by your explanation, is that there's a lot of emotions and spirituality involved in all these interactions between body, seasons, morning, afternoon, yes, evening, etc. Like you just mentioned about your this teacher who said, "Okay, bring flowers to your parents."
Yes,
I mean, there is a lot of spirituality going on there.
Yeah, you know, that's maybe something I kind of took for granted, but yeah, I could see that. Now, I don't necessarily say that to every patient, right? I think you have to kind of develop a little bit of a rapport before you say, you know, you have chronic back pain, that's a kidney pathology, go to your parents' grave and lay flowers. Like, it doesn't really work like that. But no, I agree with you that in certain contexts that it could absolutely be construed as a kind of a spiritual intervention. Though I wouldn't say I'm taking care of someone's spirit. That's a, like you said earlier, a personal sort of thing. But
yeah,
it's part of our life experience.
Yeah. Well, David, this is amazing. All this information. And I'm sorry to talk about something else.
You're fine
right now. But why American health insurance companies do not cover acupuncture?
So some of them do, but they might only cover so many treatments, or they might only cover so many what are called billing codes, where they may, some companies only cover it for acupuncture. Or I'm sorry, for cancer. If you're having cancer treatment. Side effects of chemotherapy, they only cover it during pregnancy, and many plans don't cover it at all. Now, when you ask why, there's not really a good reason. We're at the point now where we could absolutely say with research behind us that if insurance companies covered acupuncture by qualified licensed acupuncturists,
they would
be saving themselves money. Not just in terms of, less, pain medication dispensed and less physical therapy required, but also because you have another set of eyes on a person that is trained to catch sort of red flags. Like I've seen people with weird looking moles on their back and they go to the dermatologist after, on my recommendation, and they get the mole removed, that sort of thing. So you can kind of just, the more time you spend in front of people that are kind of looking for things, you can catch things before they snowball into a worse problem, which will cost the insurance companies money. So I don't really have a good answer for that. I think as time goes on, we've moved from when I first started, I had to convince doctors, about what I do. Now they send me patients, and that's 10 years. We're in hospitals now. We're in emergency rooms in some places. We're treating cancer patients. We're going to be covered by insurance universally. It's just a matter of time. I just can't say when it's going to happen.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that we are a very close-minded society when it comes to something that is not Western, that doesn't fall into what we always have believed about certain things. When we see something different, we are like, no, that doesn't work.
Yeah, or what's interesting is that these things like psychedelic medicines, ancestral medicines, acupuncture, herbal medicine, it scares people that we don't know how it works. And it can be argued that because we don't know how it works, it shouldn't be integrated into the modern medical system. But I always like to point out that, when you're taking a drug or a therapy through the FDA approval process, you need two things to be proven. You need to have safety, and you need to have efficacy. How effective is this medicine? You don't need to prove the mechanism. They didn't know how gabapentin worked until about 5 or 10 years ago, and they've been prescribing it for way longer. So it's interesting that we don't really understand a lot of pharmaceutical medicine in many respects. But if it works and it's safe.
And it's a big business.
Say that one more time.
And it's big business.
That's
a different conversation.
That's the elephant in the room. You can't package up acupuncturists and sell them a 30-day supply. you could employ them in an oppressive hospital system, though, and really squeeze a lot of value out of them, which is probably what's going to happen in the future if you look at how things are going anyways. So there's that. They could always make money off us that way.
Well, David, thank you very much again. It's been a wonderful conversation, and I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people out there listening to the podcast or listening to the episode. It's just great. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoyed talking to us.
Hey, I did. I want to throw out one last thing before I go, a book recommendation. If you're curious about these concepts and you want to learn how to apply them in your life, there's a book called Cultivating Qi. Qi is spelled C-H-I. Mm-hmm. And it is by a former Japanese samurai physician from the 1500s. It was the last book he wrote, and he wrote it in a script that was meant for everybody to read. Most of his writings were in kind of a more noble script, you could say. It wasn't meant for personal layman consumption. So I read that book a long time ago. It was the most stolen book from our waiting room. So I know people love it. So I think that's as far as my last contribution, I'd say that. And thank you very much. I'd love to do it again.
One more thing, David. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you?
Oh, that's a good question. If I am on the internet at twotreesacupuncture.com. So that's T-W-O, trees. acupuncture.com. If you just Google that, you'll find us. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina. Send me an email if you have any questions about anything. I'm always happy to have a conversation.
Perfect. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this podcast. I hope you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. If you or someone else is interested in taking part in one of the episodes, you can reach me at carcorey@pm.me or a message through one of the social media that we have. Thank you very much, everyone, and have a wonderful evening.